Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 649, The Corporate State Revisited. This is being recorded on September 27th of the year 2008. We're going to jump right back into the archive, specifically from February of 1990. This is Miscellaneous Archive Show M42, Uncle Sam and Il Duce, American Support for Mussolini and the Mythology of the Corporate State. To hear material that we don't have time to fit into this broadcast, the entire program is available for download for free on the front page of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com.
One of the main reasons why Mussolini's corporate state had so much appeal for American industrialists and financiers, apart from the enormous profits to be derived under the corporate state, was that fascism was represented as being the antidote to socialism. The corporate state and the resultant militant anti-labor violence that was an inherent part of the corporate state, this was seen as being an antidote to Bolshevism, to communism, socialism, Marxism, or whatever term one chooses to use. The fact of the matter is that at the end of World War I, in addition to the successful Bolshevik revolution in the Soviet Union, there were abortive Marxist revolutions in a number of different European countries. This terrified many of the industrialists and financiers around the world, who then sought a social system which was to be an antidote to the perceived threat of world socialism. Now, Mussolini's corporate state was seen as just this antidote and was touted as such by industrialists and financiers as well as Mussolini himself, despite the fact that Mussolini's fascism was not the explanation for the decline of Bolshevism in Italy and immediately after the First World War. In fact, the abortive communist revolution in Italy declined due to a number of factors. Mussolini's corporate state was not among them, as Mussolini himself admitted. Now, in order to examine fascism as anti-Bolshevism in a nutshell, we're going to turn to a landmark biography of Mussolini, and this author was authored by George Seldes. It's called Sawdust Caesar, The Untold History of Mussolini and Fascism. It's authored again by George Seldes, S-E-L-D-E-S, published in hardcover by Harper and Brothers, and copyright 1935 in hardcover. And of fascism as anti-Bolshevism, Seldes writes, "Simultaneously with the establishment of the corporate state came a series of loans in America and intensification of the propaganda, begun the year before when the $100 million Morgan loan was floated, that fascism was the antithesis of Bolshevism, that Mussolini had not only saved Italy but perhaps all of Europe from the Red Menace, that the corporate state was the answer to the universal utopian urge which elsewhere, notably in Russia, was making itself known in a manner quite unacceptable to the organized profit-making system. This new phenomenon, therefore, must be judged from three important points: whether it is actually the salvation from communism, quote-unquote, whether it actually functions, whether the people under the corporate state have gone forward or backward." Well, we're going to examine fascism as anti-Bolshevism, the clue of that, or the truth of that particular assertion, later in the broadcast, but we're going to begin by taking a look at the main features of fascist economics in Italy under Mussolini. We're going to take a look at some very important similarities. Again, not exact analogies, but some very important similarities between the way Mussolini ran Italy and the way Ronald Reagan and now George Bush have run the United States. Now, one of the most impressive and depressing similarities between the pro-business administration of Ronald Reagan and George Bush and that of Italy under Mussolini is the fact that, in spite of the enormous institutionalized corruption in both societies were kept afloat at least for a period of time. So far, the United States is still afloat, if you can call what's happening in February of 1990 afloat. The United States is still afloat, and Italy was kept afloat for a long period of time by basically mortgaging Italy to foreign lenders. Basically, the economic pumps of Mussolini's Italy were primed by borrowing capital abroad. A tremendous amount of money was borrowed through the floating of bonds, primarily in the United States, and as a result, Mussolini ran huge budgetary deficits and literally mortgaged Italy to American lending institutions. Now, of Mussolini's borrowing of American capital, his mortgaging of Italy to American finance, and in turn, his use of this borrowed capital to build up the Italian military rather than Italian industry at the expense of the competitiveness of the Italian economy, similar to what's happening in the United States, George Seldes writes as follows in a book called Can These Things Be?, yet another of Seldes' many, many works. Can These Things Be? By George Seldes was published in hardcover by, well, it's copyright 1931, and it's published in hardcover by Brewer and Warren Incorporated, B-R-E-W-E-R and Warren Incorporated, long since vanished into the annals of American corporate history, no doubt. Now, of Mussolini's deficit financing of his mortgaging of Italy to American finance, George Seldes writes as follows. And again, we're going to discuss some of the similarities between this and Reagan-Bush America in a minute. George Seldes writing in Can These Things Be? In order to carry on the myth of the balanced budget and the economic restoration of Italy, Mussolini has mortgaged Italy to American finance. American citizens now own about $500 million worth of Italy. Some of the principal borrowings, this list is not complete but is assuredly much longer, are Kingdom of Italy 7s, these are presumably the interest rates on the bond issues here, Kingdom of Italy 7s, $100 million, J.P. Morgan and Company, these are the financial institutions in this country which floated the loans. Kingdom of Italy 7s, $100 million, J.P. Morgan and Company, and again, bear in mind, a dollar worth much more in the 20s and 30s than it is now. City of Rome, 6.5s, $30 million, J.P. Morgan and Company. City of Milan, 6.5s, $20 million, Dillon Reed, Bankers Trust, and the Guarantee Trust. Credit Consortium 7s, $10 million, Morgan, National City, and the First National. Adriatic Electric 7s, $5 million, Blair and Company. Fiat 7s, $10 million, Morgan. International Securities, $35 million, Alfred and Company, Harris Forbes, and Bankers Trust. Italian Public Utility 7s, $20 million, Blair and Chase Securities. Lombard Electric 7s, $6 million, Blair, Chase, Rollins and Company. Mendionali Electric 7s, $10,250,000, Marshall Field, Glore, Ward, Blythe, Wither and Company. Montecalini Mineral 7s, $6 million, Guarantee Trust, Marshall Field, Glore Award, International Acceptance Bank. Pirelli 7s, $4 million, Morgan. United Electric 7s, $5 million, Rollins and Blair. Then there also is listed here with no financial institutions after them. Private Credits, $25 million. Snea Viscosa, $9 million. Electric Union, $6 million. Terni, $25 million. Ademello, $10 million. Isotta Frascini, $1,700,000, and the Rome Gas Company, $10 million. And Seldes goes on to comment, "And I am sure it will be a real pleasure to the Bolshevik-hating American public to know that a large part of the $500 million they put into Italy is being used to continue the black or anti-red terror. Perhaps it will be proud of the fact that American money is being used by Mussolini to create a fleet for the officially announced purpose of controlling the Mediterranean. What does this control mean? It means a war with England or France." Well, of course, later it was to mean a war with the United States as well. Worth noting here that as we saw in our Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast about U.S. industrial and financial support for Nazi Germany, American financial institutions helped float the loans to get the capital to build the very Italian military which was to take the lives of American servicemen during World War II. Also worth noting, very importantly for our purposes here, that the temporary perceived success of Mussolini's Italy, such as it was accomplished, again, by mortgaging Italy to American finance. It should be noted here, too, that the money borrowed was plowed by Mussolini in considerable measure into the building of the military rather than industry, rather than into improving Italian municipalities and utilities. Much of it was used for building up the Italian military. Of course, Ronald Reagan's huge budget deficits stem from the enormous defense budgets and the tax cuts which accompanied them. And again, the United States so far under Reagan-Bush has been kept afloat basically by floating bonds. Basically, our T-bills have kept the United States from going under so far. Basically, the Japanese, Germans, and other major investors have underwritten America's debt incurred in order to build up the American military rather than American industry, this, of course, placing the United States in a less competitive international position. And again, I'm not suggesting in any way that this is an exact analogy, but I am suggesting that it is an important and valid analogy, and one which, again, is very, very scary for our purposes here. Now, one of the main ways in which Mussolini was able to continue to secure those American loans was by portraying his corporate state as a success, whereas in fact it was not a success. We're going to go into now the economic mythology of the corporate state, how it was maintained, that is to say, how that mythology was maintained, and in particular we're going to take a look at how the American press gave favorable coverage to Mussolini's corporate state, thereby serving to justify the investments of the American financial institutions who had floated the Italian bond issues, and also serving to justify the rationale behind the corporate state. Again, the American mainstream press covered for Mussolini and gave a coverage to Mussolini's Italy which was in defiance of the actual record, in defiance of the facts. Turning once again now to the book Sawdust Caesar, George Selde's landmark biography of Mussolini's Italy, we're going to take a look now at one of the major aspects of fraudulent fascist finance, and one of the major aspects in which I think Mussolini's corporate state is comparable in certain important respects to the America of Ronald Reagan and George Bush. Reading again from Sawdust Caesar, the he here, of course, is Mussolini. He flatly makes the statement that, quote, "Today we have a balanced budget. Self-ruling units, the provinces and the communes, have balanced their budgets too. Exports and imports and their relationships are carried on in a precise and definite rhythm, that of our stabilized lira." We're going to take a look at the economic mythology now of Mussolini's Italy. Specifically, we're going to take a look at the myth of the balanced budget in Italy. We're also going to take a look at the myth of favorable balances of trade in Italy. Another similar characteristic between Reagan-Bush America and Mussolini's Italy is that both the Italy of Mussolini and the America of Reagan and Bush have run huge trade deficits. But first, of the mythology of the balanced budget. And again, I'm not suggesting this is an exact analogy between Mussolini's Italy and contemporary America, but I do think that the budgetary chicanery, the cooking of the books, the budgetary BS here, the way in which Mussolini used blatantly fraudulent bookkeeping in order to make it appear as if his deficit financing actually had produced, or his state had produced, a balanced budget rather than huge budget deficits, this cooking of the books, this budgetary BS that Mussolini engaged in is, as I said, very similar to what the Bush administration and the Reagan administration before it have done in the United States. Of the budgetary chicanery of Mussolini and how it was used to justify the economic status quo, George Seldes writes as follows in Sawdust Caesar. In 1925, the first reports were sent from Rome that jugglery, trickery, and distorted official figures and statements have marked fascist finance. The Irish journalist and former diplomatic attaché in Rome, James Murphy, has published in the German, French, British, and American magazines numerous articles charging fraud which have never been challenged. He states, for instance, that the fascisti, to maintain confidence and goodwill abroad, especially among banking interests, have organized a system of propaganda about their economic position, have given to the public, quote, a state budget which has little or no relation to the real financial condition. It is simply a piece of propaganda. I should not make such a statement without being in a position to bring forward proof. Take Di Stefani's budget for 1923-24. For that year, I find that under one heading alone, there was an expenditure of 14 billion of lira, $700 million, not a cent of which is debited in the state budget. The expenditure was officially announced in the official gazette. It figures in the treasury accounts, but it is carefully kept out of the budget that has been published. That sum alone would practically consume the whole income from taxation for the same year. Therefore, De Stefani's first budget had really a much heavier deficit than those of his predecessors, even if we confine the deficit to the above expenditure and say nothing of other treasury debts incurred. To keep all such questions dark, the press is muzzled, and foreign journalists are watched and persecuted lest they begin to pry into the question of Italy's finances. By such means, and by the expenditure of huge sums for propaganda abroad, the fascists think that they will be able to stave off the day when their real economic and financial position may become known to foreign bankers and foreign industrialists, unquote. Mr. Murphy likewise questions both Mussolini and American bankers on the subject of balanced budget by the municipalities. Quote, "One of the immediate purposes of the dictatorship obtaining control of the municipalities," he declares, "is the facilitation of fascism's shady finance. It is well known that a favorite trick practiced since Mussolini got control of things is to falsify the state budget by transferring state expenses to the municipal budgets. All the municipal budgets show a deficit, but this does not appear in public. And there will be no chance of its coming into the light now when there will be no local supervisors appointed by the people. The system will be understood if we imagine all the municipalities as subordinate corporations grouped under the one parent corporation, which is the state. The balance sheets of the subordinate corporations are being thrown more and more into a state of insolvency in order to make the parent balance sheet look healthy. Yet the parent corporation is solely dependent on the solvency of all the subordinated corporations taken together. American financiers who have visited Italy have been too simple-minded to spot this trick. They have also been too simple-minded to ask for the Treasury accounts and collate them with the budget. And so the fascist financial bluff has gone ahead triumphantly. Mussolini wants to show the unwary Yankee how splendidly everything is going in Italy so that he can raise loans in the United States, unquote. To such general statements must be added the official figures from the fascist government's publications. The debts of the provinces as of January 1, 1925 are $954 million, and January 1, 1928, $1,326 million, while the debts of the capital cities of the provinces are as follows. January 1, 1925, $3,066 million, January 1, 1928, $5,481 million, increase in debt, $2,415 million, which somehow does not agree with Mussolini's statement that, quote, the provinces and the communes have balanced their budgets too, unquote. Fascist Italy, say European economists, is the only country in the world which announces balanced budgets while showing deficits in the treasury. Perhaps they would change, or Seldes would change that assessment, as would the European economists, had they had the opportunity to view contemporary America. Of the mythology of Mussolini's favorable balance of trade, which was accomplished again through assessing Italians abroad at very, very expensive remittances, of the fascist fraud of a favorable balance of trade, Seldes writes as follows, again from Sawdust Caesar. The American commercial attaché, H.C. McLean, reported from Rome on January 16, 1928, that, quote, the outstanding characteristic of Italy's relations with the rest of the world is the large excess of the country's merchandise imports over its merchandise exports, a condition prevailing for many years. To compensate the large adverse trade balance in visible terms, notably remittances from Italians resident abroad and expenditures of foreign tourists in Italy, must be largely depended upon, unquote. The attaché then points out an adverse trade balance of almost 5 billion lira for the first 10 months of 1927, adding, quote, having accepted 5 billion as Italy's adverse trade balance and 1.5 billion as its net outgo on financial transactions, we have a total of 6.5 billion lira for which compensation must be found on the credit side of the country's international accounts. He then shows that emigrants' remittances have sharply declined, whereas in 1926, the withdrawals from postal savings banks were practically compensated by new deposits. During the first 10 months of 1927, such withdrawals exceeded deposits by no less than 570 million lira. So again, the fraudulent aspects of Mussolini's claims for a favorable balance of trade here set forth by Seldes. Now, one of the major points of this broadcast is that the mainstream American press, acting in concert with the perceived interests of corporate America, I guess you could say, continued to parrot the various aspects of corporate mythology, of the mythology of Mussolini's corporate state, and they fell right into line with the propagation of the myth, and we've just seen what a myth that is, of Mussolini's balanced budget. Seldes writes as follows of the American press's parroting of the mythology of the balanced budget in Sawdust Caesar. It was nothing short of a miracle. The sun of economic fatality stood still in the heavens at the command of the prophet, and the American international bond floaters sang the epic of the great deed as they issued $600 million in loans to Italy. $600 million American dollars is a sum. It was surely worth the employment of Public Relations Council with the aid of the banking houses in protecting it. Time after time, between 1925 and 1929, the American public dumped the Italian bonds back on the market, and each time the dozen houses which floated them intensified their campaign, which created the Mussolini balanced budget myth, while they threatened the banking and brokerage firms which represented them with cutting them off from participation in future business if they failed to dispose of the Italian goods. The Duce, of course, has always been party to the financial myth-making. He declared the stabilization at 19 was approved by, quote, profound experts in financial questions. That's the stabilization of the lira, which turned out to be a disaster. But it was later proven that Finance Minister Volpe and his good friend Andrew W. Mellon had advised against that figure. It was always the head of the government who struck the note for the orchestra of the press to follow. when the bankers and the press agents and the Italians who wrote for the Associated Press and the American newspapers reported the stabilization at 19 to the dollar a victory, that Bolshevism threatened in 1922, that the budgets had balanced, that the municipalities were out of the red, literally and figuratively, and that prosperity had crowned the planned economy of fascism up to 1929, they are but playing variations on the tune which the master musician originated. That last sentence again. When the bankers and the press agents and the Italians who wrote for the Associated Press and the American newspapers reported the stabilization at 19 to the dollar a victory, that Bolshevism threatened in 1922, that the budgets had balanced, that the municipalities were out of the red literally and figuratively, and that prosperity had crowned the planned economy of fascism up to 1929, they are but playing variations on the tune which the master musician originated. And as we're going to see here, the continued perpetuation of the economic and political mythology of the corporate state was a major occupation of the American press during that period. We're going to take another short musical break, and we're going to come back to taking a look at just how Mussolini and the American press propagated the myth of an improvement in the lifestyle of the average Italian under fascism, whereas in fact the standard of living of the average Italian plummeted under fascism, unless of course you were one of the main backers of Mussolini's party. We're next going to approach another aspect of the economic mythology of Mussolini's corporate state, and specifically, we're going to take a look at how Mussolini propagated the myth that his corporate state improved the standard of living of the average Italian. In fact, the standard of living for the average Italian worker, as might be expected, plummeted under fascism. Mussolini misrepresented that, and once again, we're going to see the pattern of the American press covering basically for Mussolini, perpetuating the lie that Mussolini first generated concerning the myth of the improvement of the standard of living for the average Italian. Returning once again to Sawdust Caesar by George Seldes, of the myth of the improvement of the Italian lifestyle under Mussolini. However, the only important thing for us to consider is whether, functioning or not as a corporate state, the fascist system of planned economy, the substitute for the planned economy of Bolshevism, has or has not achieved anything up to date. It is Mussolini who said that the state's ultimate goal is, quote, the well-being of the Italian people, unquote. It must be, quote, judged and measured directly by the masses as instruments through which these masses may improve their standard of living. Someday the worker, the tiller of the soil, will say to himself and to others, quote, if today I am better off practically, I owe it to the institutions which the fascist revolution has created, unquote. Interrupting here briefly, that reminds me in a way of the campaign slogan that Reagan used for his second campaign in 1984. Basically, the Reagan Revolution asked the question about whether or not, basically they asked the American electorate to consider whether or not you're better off than you were 4 years ago. Again, I'm not suggesting this is a precise analogy, but it's similar. Again, Mussolini writing here, someday the worker, the tiller of the soil, will say to himself and to others, quote, if today I am better off practically, I owe it to the institutions which the fascist revolution has created, unquote. In just this manner, let the following facts pass judgment. This again is Seldes writing. In 1926, when the few untrammeled journalists reported that there was already a crisis in fascist economics and that the publicly announced balanced budgets were mere jugglery, official figures showed that wages were below 1921 and that the cost of living had gone up 30%. In 1927, with the stabilization of the lira, Mussolini found a much more serious economic crisis. He therefore announced a reduction in rentals, reduction in the price of manufactured goods, and a wage cut throughout the nation of between 5 and 20%. He promised that the cuts ordered in the high cost of living would more than recompense the reductions in salary. At that time, the general price index was 670, wages stood at 585. In real wages, the workman was 13% worse off than before the war. That fascism had proved a failure so far as the working population of Italy is concerned long before the world crisis of 1929-35 is openly admitted in the 1932 report of the Secretary of State for Corporations, who wrote, quote, between June 1927 and December 1928, the wages of industrial workers have gone down by about 20%, and a further reduction of 10% was made in 1929. During 1930, there has been a general reduction varying for the different categories of workers from 18 to 25%. Many other adjustments have been realized in 1931, unquote. But that is not all. The decree effective December 1, 1930, cut the salaries of those earning more than $3,000 a year by 35% and those below $2,000 by 12%, and wages of 300 lira, $15.70, to 1,000 lira, $52.35 a month, 8%, and those above 1,000 lira, 10%. This cut affected 1 million laborers in the industrial centers of the North, Milan, Turin, and Genoa. The government announced it hoped, unquote, to reduce prices of commodities accordingly. Skipping down, and George Seldes next writes not only about the decline of the Italian standard of living under Mussolini for most people, that is, of course, unless you were one of his main fascist backers, but he talks about how the American press continued to misrepresent what was actually a decline in the Italian standard of living, or in the standard of living for the average Italian, and this was misrepresented as gains by the American press. Again, the same sort of perpetuation of the economic mythology of Mussolini's corporate state that we looked at vis-a-vis the balanced budget. To complete the chronicle, it was announced by Mussolini on December 11, 1934, that a nationwide and simultaneous reduction in salaries and the cost of living was being worked out, which directly affected every person in the kingdom, directly and indirectly, the cut being similar to that of October 1930, and similarly carrying with it a reduction in cost of rent, light, heat, food, and transport of between 10 and 12%. But instead of mentioning the obvious collapse of the fascist economy, the American press heralded each of these seven events with an appropriate excuse furnished by the fascist propaganda department. The headlines, for example, said that the 1927 cut was due to the success of the stabilization on a gold basis. In 1933, Mr. Cortese of the Times supplied a story which was headed, quote, Italy cuts wages to aid recovery, unquote. The first 1934 reduction was linked with one in Russia, and the joint headline read, Russia and Italy slash payrolls in economy wave, unquote. The second 1934 cut was reported by the Times as, quote, Italy to slash wages and cost of living to meet competition of non-gold nations. So once again, we see the perpetuation by the American news media of the mythology of Mussolini's corporate state.
That again recorded in February of 1990. Just compare that with what's going on today. And we're going to conclude the broadcast with the last paragraph from James Stewart Martin's book, All Honorable Men. This also available for download for free at the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com, the new improved website. James Stewart Martin warned in 1950 about what may lay ahead for the United States, and he wrote at the conclusion of his 300-page book, "The moral of this is not that Germany is an inevitable menace, but that there are forces in our own country which can make Germany a menace. And more importantly, they could create a menace of their own here at home, not through a deliberate plot to bring about a political catastrophe, but as a calm judgment of business necessity. The men who would do this are not Nazis, but businessmen. Not criminals, but honorable men." This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 649. Uncle Sam and Il Duce... excuse me, I blew it. Let me just drop in the rest of it. Yeah. Beginning again. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 649, The Corporate State Revisited, being recorded on September 27th of the year 2008. Use the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.